Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Got a great guest for you, Nick Kendall. How you doing, Nick?
You know what? I'm doing better than my Broncos are, so I can't complain too much. Things are going pretty well. I'm out here in Seattle, so it's a double whammy for me, getting to see the Broncos pick climb higher and higher for the local Seahawks. But you know what? Otherwise, pretty darn good.
Yeah, sometimes I feel that same way about the Ravens, and particularly with the loss last year. But tell folks, first of all, where they can find you on Twitter, where you do your writing and other work.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Nick Kendall MHH. That's K-E-N-D-E-L-L for the audio format there. And I work at Mile High Huddle, an affiliate of Sports Illustrated, and do live streams on YouTube for Mile High Huddle, a lot of podcasts as well. So most of my dabbling is in the audio format, but I do some writing as well.
Okay. Outstanding, Nick. We're glad to have you. Need to say thanks to our sponsor here. That's Liquid Death, the water that will murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been good to us, and they're very green in terms of recyclable aluminum cans. Really appreciate that about them. Good flavors as well, you'll stay for. Let's jump right in on the Broncos here in terms of their biggest offseason move, obviously, the acquisition of Russell Wilson. But tell us about the others as well, starting perhaps with Wilson.
Yeah, the Broncos traded a lot of draft capital and two starters from last year's team in Noah Fant and Shelby Harris to bring in Russell Wilson as the starting quarterback. And things have gone off the rails pretty darn quickly here in the Mile High City, unfortunately. The Broncos also brought in some offensive linemen, but pretty much everybody has gotten hurt on the offensive line that they've brought in, unfortunately. So, and on the defensive side of the ball, I think that's where the biggest impact move they've made so far this season has been in DJ Jones on the defensive line. He's been a really, really solid interior defensive lineman for them. Unfortunately, the other Broncos' biggest move this offseason probably was bringing in edge rusher Randy Gregory, the supremely talented pass rusher, played for the Cowboys for a number of years out of University of Nebraska. And he's been injured as well. So this is I think the Broncos have the most salary cap on the injured reserve in the NFL so far this season, on top of a team that seems to be struggling schematically, personnel-wise, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why right now they look like they're going to be sending the fourth overall pick to the Seahawks if the season ended today.
Yeah, difficult year, obviously. Talk about their draft a little bit in terms of who they picked up and who they have to look forward to over the next few years.
Yeah, so a lot of people were really excited about the Broncos general manager, George Payton, when they first brought him in. Obviously, the Nathaniel Hackett hired head coach, the Russell Wilson trade and the Russell Wilson contract have soured things a bit, but he had a pretty darn good 2021 draft. This is a draft that you can build a team on. You need to stack drafts, obviously. Ravens fans know that as much as anybody. But Patrick Surtain at 9 overall, he's been in a little bit of a cold spell the last couple weeks against Davante Adams and DJ Moore. Granted, the defense has started to seem to regress somewhat as well with that, but Patrick Surtain looks like a future all-pro level cornerback, only 22 years old. He's been phenomenal. The Broncos traded up for Javonta Williams, another guy that's been injured. He looked like an emerging star running back, and he's been out for the year, so hopefully he'll get back. He tore two ligaments in his knee, though, so that's always a little bit concerning. And then in the third round in the 2021 draft, the Broncos ended up drafting the likes of Quinn Miners, who will be the Broncos starting right guard out of Wisconsin Whitewater, small school guy, but a lot of personality, really fun player to follow, and a really good athlete for the position. Still kind of working on the technique, given the jump up and competition from Whitewater to the NFL.
Yeah, loved Miners, and he's one of the only small school guys picked in that draft right after the COVID situation.
Yeah,
but he also has some similarities to Tyler Linderbaum here in Baltimore, in that he's a guy who's a much better run blocker than pass blocker. Correct?
Yeah, that is correct. His is more of a technique side of things. Like Quinn Miners has a massive wingspan. He's a big guy, where Tyler Linderbaum is a little bit more limited due to size limitations and length limitations. And you're talking to I love my Broncos, but I'm an Iowa Hawkeye first and foremost. So I know my, Marshall Yanda, Tyler Linderbaum, and the Iowa line there to the Ravens offensive line there. But Broncos also took talking Big Ten here, another player in the third round in the 2021 draft that's been really was promising and then had an injury and has been working back from injury. But that's Baron Browning from Ohio State. They had him kind of in no man's land there at Ohio State because he was playing that off-ball stack linebacker spot. But really, his athletic profile always screamed edge to me, and they moved him to edge this offseason. He's been really good there when he's been healthy. The last couple of weeks working off of a hip injury have not been as impactful, but he's been really good out there, and he's going to have to step up because, again, Randy Gregory's hurt. The Broncos traded Bradley Chubb, and the draft pick from this last cycle in Nick Benito out of Oklahoma, 64th overall pick, has flashed in pass rush, but has been really, really poor in setting the edge against the run. Same was an issue at Oklahoma as well, but it's been a major weakness on the defense since they've traded Chubb.
Now, it's funny because Benito was a guy I recall they talking about being able to be moved inside a lot, being a guy who could you know, play a three maybe on, or certainly a five on a passing down. Have the Broncos tried to use him in that role at all, or just as an outside pass rush guy?
Oh, no, he's not at all. I don't think he has the frame. He's like 240 pounds-ish. I think there were some instances at Oklahoma with Grinch as their, I think that's the name of the defensive coordinator there at Oklahoma, now at USC, where they did a lot of slanting stuff. And in rundowns, they'd actually play Benito at like stack linebacker, and then on pass downs, bring him down in different gaps or whatnot to rush the passer. So he's having issues holding up at the point of attack and setting the edge. And that's become a much bigger issue on this defense for the Broncos, considering Randy Gregory's out, Baron Browning's been dealing with injury, they traded Chubb, and the other edge rushers they have in Jacob Martin and Jonathan Cooper have been dinged up as well. So Benito's had a lot of reps where he's had to play on first and second down, and it's been a struggle, but if you get him in third and long or whatever, his bend and his get off are pretty darn good.
It's good to see a trial by fire occurring. That's one thing you really want with young players, is to actually get them in there during year one. And the Ravens have had some difficulty, you know, with their guys this year, particularly Ojabo and Kolar coming back from injuries. I've yet to see the field so far. I'm a big believer in fail forward in your first year. You know, if you get on the field for 150 snaps, but you learn something from that and you take it in next year, that's a big win developmentally for that player.
Yeah, 100%. The other players on this rookie class that have been stepping up and having pretty prominent roles on this team have been Greg Dulcich, tight end out of UCLA, taken in the third round. He was pretty good early on. He missed most of OTAs in the offseason, and tight ends historically take, you know, 3 years really to hit the ground running because it's such a complicated position from college to the NFL for most of these guys. But he's been pretty impactful pretty quickly for the Broncos. So that's been good to see, obviously limited because of the passing in general, and Denver is limited right now. He does have to work on his run blocking as well, but he's been above expectation, probably the only single player on the Broncos offense that has exceeded expectations this season for me. Wow. And then the best Broncos rookie so far this season has probably been fourth round pick Damari Mathis. He did have a really rough intro game week five against the Chargers, where I think he had like four pass interferences called against him. But since then, he's been really good. He doesn't always rely on his technique and be a little grabby, but he has the mentality where, you know, short-term memory, he's going to compete at the catch point every time. A very physical player there coming out of University of Pittsburgh. So those have been the main guys. Obviously, the Broncos traded a lot of draft capital to get Russell Wilson, so they didn't have a lot of top picks in this last class. But those are the big three, I think, from this class that you will see in this game.
All right. Outstanding. I know this is not a pleasant topic, but the long-run cap situation in Denver, talk a little bit. One thing I keep seeing on Twitter is people asking, is there even a feasible way to get out of the Russell Wilson contract? I think I know the answer, but tell us about it a little bit.
It's certainly complicated, given the way the contract is set up, but there are ways where you can eat a lot of dead cap to move on from Russell Wilson. I don't think it's feasible to do after this season, given how the cap would set up for the Broncos, but by using the post-June 1st designation, they can split that cap hit over two seasons. They can even split it over three seasons if they restructure some of the signing bonuses. So if the offense is still this poor next season, if Russell Wilson is still this poor after the 2023 season, it's possible you would take it on the chin, certainly with, you know, about $40 million dead cap hit over two seasons each. But we've seen teams with a much higher propensity to do that over recent history. I mean, the Rams have done it recently. The Falcons have done it recently with their big high-end quarterbacks. It's not a situation anybody in Denver wants to be in. But if it's still this poor, it's certainly something to consider. And now there's even more and more rumors coming out of fractions in the Broncos locker room between Russell Wilson and some of the players. Yeah. So it's possible.
So we've seen some of this about defensive players coming over to him. And I forget who it was exactly, but I mean, you could tell the story in terms of let's get going. And Russell Wilson does the right thing, doesn't throw his teammate under the bus when he goes to the podium.
Yeah, it's Mike Purcell had a somewhat boneheaded personal foul penalty after a PAT attempt from the Carolina Panthers in the last game. And don't know exactly what was said, but Mike Purcell definitely came over and yelled in Russell Wilson's direction. They said that Russell Wilson and Mike Purcell both said that Purcell stated that let's go. And Russell Wilson's like, yeah, I got you. We're going to pick it up. We got you. But who knows? It's definitely not a great situation right now. I mean, Russell Wilson has his own trainers in there. He has his own personal quarterback coach. He has his own office on the second floor. He's not in the locker room that much and he's playing poorly. So there's definitely some frustration that is boiling in Denver, and with the contract situation, how they're married to him, and especially without the draft capital, it's going to be interesting to follow. Unfortunate for me, but interesting for the NFL landscape at large to follow going forward here.
That's very interesting. I didn't know about the kind of the CEO office that Wilson had. I think that's always a bad thing to take a player out of the way. If you're going to have a quarterback's office, which, you know, oftentimes there's just the quarterback room. They talked about Tom Brady having it is really his office at Gillette, you know, but I believe that was on the same floor with the locker room, or at least on the same floor with the other team facilities there.
Yeah. So, yeah. If you're a great quarterback, I don't really have an issue with that. But when you are playing as poor as Russell Wilson is right now, then privileges probably got to be somewhat revoked. Can you put that genie back in the bottle? I don't know, but they got to figure out something this offseason. And having the too many cooks in the kitchen with his own personal coach and everything in there versus, you know, the contrasting voice of his quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, whatever it is, it's not working right now. So they're going to have to figure something out.
Does he have an off-season guru he goes to that is also a guy who hangs around the team during the season?
Yep, yeah, and he has his own like medical staff and whatnot, and also his wife and kids are allowed to come in there. I mean, they pretty much, you know, gave him free reign in Denver, and it's really ugly right now.
Yeah, this reminds me a little bit. I don't know if you remember the pitcher Kevin Brown from the mid '90s. He was with the Orioles. Mm-hmm. He signed with the LA. Dodgers, I believe, and they gave him the biggest contract in baseball at the time, plus a personal jet to use to bring his family around to games all the time. I was like, this is out of line here. All right, let's move on to the offense here. Talk about Wilson himself. How is he a different quarterback this year than he was in Seattle?
I think that, well, A, his athleticism has taken a big step downwards. His burst, his agility have all diminished somewhat now. Some of that could be age. It was Russell Wilson's birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Russell Wilson, 34 years old. And a lot of his play in Seattle was dependent on out of structure, ability to escape the pocket and create out of structure and then hit big plays down the field. This season so far, now he has had a hamstring injury. He's had a lat injury as well. But even before that, he looked a little bit slower in escaping the pocket and in taking that space available to him when it's there, when the pocket breaks down. Before, used to see him, you know, be a slippery little guy and run quickly away from defensive linemen and linebackers, kind of, you know, step with step with him. But this season, defensive linemen have been closing in on him and he hasn't been able to get out of structure so much. And that was only exacerbated by the hamstring injury. Another issue, I think it's more of a schematic issue in the way the league is going right now. We can all blame former Denver Broncos head coach Vic Fangio for this, but points across the NFL are at not an all-time low, but 10, 15 year low, relative low because of how teams are playing defense right now. A lot of two high safety shells, a lot of cover six, a lot of cover four, a lot of cover two, or even the pre-snap look. And then they rotate a safety down into a cover one or cover three look. And Russell Wilson, historically, if you've ever seen heat maps of him or how he attacks the field, he doesn't use the middle of the field. He's really relied on outside the hash marks vertically. And with the more two deep split safety shells, those big passes are being taken away systematically across the league. And because Russell Wilson struggles in the quick game, he always has, because he's not working in the middle of the field, he always has avoided that area. Those issues are even more amplified on this team and in the current landscape of the NFL. So it's a big issue for the Broncos, and we're gonna have to see how they strategically counter that.
It's an interesting description of Wilson, because I think of him and Lamar Jackson in a lot of ways being very similar quarterbacks, but Lamar Jackson doesn't throw outside the numbers nearly as much. Mm-hmm. He's a middle of the field guy, despite the fact that he has some other characteristics. I wonder though, if in looking at Lamar Jackson's contract situation and how Russell Wilson has aged, and it has been kind of an all-at-once thing with the Broncos this year. He'd been a great quarterback the last 4 years, obviously part of the reason he was signed for so much. Is there a cautionary tale there for the Ravens in terms of how far they should be willing to go with Jackson?
I think that with Jackson, you do need to give yourself the ability to get out of the contract. I think that's the biggest thing with this Russell Wilson one is with an athletic quarterback that's super dependent on the athleticism. You are always one hit or age away from the play style and what works falling off the map. And that could be an issue with Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson is obviously significantly younger and plays the game different, like you mentioned. I think one of the biggest issues with Russell Wilson's inability to throw the middle of the field is he can't see. He can't see over the line of scrimmage, so he's avoiding that area. Most of his throws that are short are behind the line of scrimmage horizontally. So I think it's a little bit different. I would not be as trepidatious with paying Lamar Jackson given his age. You know, he's not going to be 33, 34 years old where the quarterbacks who have been older that have worked at that age are the ones who are the cerebral, super pocket-dependent passers that work the quick pass game, that even the run game isn't as important with those guys because they can essentially run through the air. Mm-hmm. So with Lamar Jackson, I think this first contract, as long as you can give yourself the ability to get out if something does happen, I wouldn't be too concerned. But the contract after this one, I would be skeptical.
Mm-hmm. Understood. It's so third contract for a quarterback, second contract for a running back, kind of similar
for a running quarterback. Yeah.
Let's move on here. Talk about the offensive line. Take us through position by position, kind of what's happened and where they are now.
Well, the Broncos they lost their left tackle for the season. He suffered an injury, Garrett Bowles. So they've been working in Calvin Anderson out there, who was their fourth string offensive tackle this season. He's okay out there. He's, I guess, as good as you could hope for an offensive tackle. Most teams don't even have two starting caliber offensive tackles. So the fact that Broncos are on their fourth/fifth out there at left tackle is not great, but he's not a massive issue. They've had left guard Dalton Risner out there all season. He was, I think, the 42nd overall pick in the 2019 draft. He's been fine. He's better in pass protection than the run game. Broncos have had major issues moving the ball through the run game this season due to offensive line personnel. Dalton Risner, he's a free agent at the end of the year. He'll probably be let walk. He's fine, but he's not really much of a difference maker. He's kind of a league average player at guard. They have Graham Glasgow at center. He is the second string center because your starting center got hurt, is out for the year in Lloyd Cushenberry. He was struggling. Actually, I think Glasgow's been better there. The issue with Glasgow is that he's 6'6 at center, and you talk about Russell Wilson not being able to see over the line of scrimmage. 6'6 center does not help with that, but at least he doesn't get blown back into Russell Wilson's lap, which is a benefit as well.
I had a friend who's a big Lloyd Cushenberry fan, and I loved him for multiple reasons, but I didn't think he was a first round draft pick in terms of length and in particular being one of the nice factors. But what's really been wrong with him in terms of adjusting to the NFL?
He seems like a really cerebral player, but he does not have much agility. Reach blocks have been out of the question, and Denver has tried to move to a more outside zone scheme this season, but you're not seeing anything where Cushenberry is getting outside of his own little box there or double teaming and reaching the second level. Also, he's getting pushed back in the lap of the quarterback pretty often. His anchor strength is not up there as well. So the Broncos, I think, are going to look to move on from him as a starter this upcoming season. Maybe they can salvage a little bit of value from him if he can take some guard snaps as well as a versatile backup. But he has not progressed like they had hoped, and definitely been a lesser player on the offensive line this season.
Well, I really appreciate the frank look at him, but that is really too bad to hear. And they did only draft him in the third round, I see. For some reason, I know a lot of people had him in the first round, at the end of the first round, kind of being that guy. But the Broncos probably thought they had a real value in round three getting him there.
Yeah, and I mean, as a rookie contract player, you kind of hope that, you know, year one for a center especially takes a little bit, but we're on year three now and he hasn't improved at all. And if you're looking to be an impact running blocking team, which the Broncos probably do have to be to maximize Russell Wilson going forward, Cushenberry doesn't seem to be that kind of guy. He's much more solid in pass protection, but not really a plus player in the ground game. And with Russell Wilson specifically, you need to be able to anchor at the point of attack, and he just gets pushed back too often against nose guards.
Yeah, absolutely. We you know, obviously we're seeing that in Baltimore. That is the weakness of Tyler Lindebaum in terms of getting to the NFL. And people ask me pretty much every week, you know, how much of this is reversible? I score offensive line play here every mm-hmm. score every block. And one of the questions is, you know, can he really come back from this? And he's so good in space, so good moving it around. That's not the problem at all. It's just not as valuable as being an inline blocker, particularly as a passer. You cannot, you know, continue to make excuses for a guy who's getting beaten by half of the nose tackles in the league, you know, in terms of getting push.
Yeah, no, Cushenberry's issue is we can do a trade if you want. We'll take the bomb in Denver, but it'd be an issue with the pass game. But I think Denver's going to have to lean hard into the run game to maximize Russell Wilson and become a very play action centric team, somewhat similar to what we're seeing right now with Arthur Smith and the Falcons. The rest of the offensive line, Quinn Meinerz looks like an ascending player. I've been impressed with him out there. I don't think he's probably closer to average than above average, but I'd expect him to be that much better next season. He had a injury and he missed, I think, 6 games this season earlier in the year as well. So, I mean, this is going to be a constant theme. They're injured there. They're injured there. Kind of like how the Ravens were last year. That's how Denver feels this mm-hmm. season, unfortunately. And then right tackle, it was originally supposed to be Billy Turner. He missed most of the beginning of the season, and he played, I think, 2.5 weeks and then got injured and is out for the year now. They signed Tom Compton, who I think has had 2 snaps this season, to be the other right tackle. He hasn't played. And then they signed before the season, due to all the injuries before the season even started, they signed Cameron Fleming, who has been solid. He's playing at about 75% right now. He has an injury as well. He's had some tough matchups the last few weeks. He got beat by Max Crosby a couple times against the Raiders. He got beat by Brian Burns. Part of that is because Russell Wilson's not stepping up in the pocket, because probably, again, can't see or can't escape. But Cam Fleming, I think, has actually been...
By now, you're probably noticing that there's strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, that's because it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it will brutally murder your thirst, and their infinitely recyclable tall boy cans help bring death to plastic bottles. They also donate 10% of their profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. By now, you probably know how much I love Liquid Death. Well, every week I tell you about a different way I've used Liquid Death to mess with people. This week it was taking a cooler full of Liquid Death to the softball game. Because as our team chugged down Liquid Death, our play improved while the other team drank other stuff and maybe got a little sloppy out on the field. So take Liquid Death. The other team has no clue what you're doing. Or take it to work. We've talked about that many times. Drag it around to your friends at school. Maybe the carpool lane. Maybe we'll talk about the carpool lane next week. Just take Liquid Death. Enjoy it. It's ice cold water. You're going to have a great time and fun. Go get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find Liquid Death retailers near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
Much better than anticipated there at right tackle and one of their better offensive linemen, but he is playing hurt right now.
All right. Yeah. Like everybody, as you mentioned,
it's unbelievable. Really.
I appreciate the empathy for the 2021 Ravens too. It won't do us any good, but at least we understand each other. Take us through the wide receiver core right now in terms of who they have.
Well, you might see 2 of the Broncos top 3 or top 4, I guess, wide receivers back this week. The Broncos the last couple of weeks have been without, both of their 2020 draft picks, first round and second round, in Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler. Both those guys should help the offense a lot. Jerry Jeudy is your man coverage key in the Broncos offense. He's the only one who can separate consistently versus man coverage, and he's still a phenomenal route runner. Not always the best in contested situations, not always the most physical player, but if you are playing man coverage against the Broncos, that's probably where the ball is going to end up going, because he is very good at getting separation. So hopefully he's going to be back. He suffered an ankle injury and has missed the last 2 games. KJ Hamler is their big play threat. We talk about Russell Wilson kind of being a boom or bust quarterback. KJ Hamler's had, I think, 3 or 4 40 plus yard catches this season and has only played like half the games because of a hamstring issue. So if he's back, he should help the Broncos offense at least do one of the only things they've been good at this season, which is the explosive play. So watch for those 2 back. They're both injured right now, so we'll see. But injury reports to watch going forward. Cortland Sutton has been fine for the Broncos this season. He's been actually one of the few people that's been healthy. The Broncos toss it up to him a lot, and they get a lot of pass interferences down the field. Actually, that's another area the Broncos have been great this year. Number one in the NFL in yards gained off of pass interference. So I guess hooray for being number one there. But Courtland Sutton down the field, he's not really a burner in terms of speed, but his stride length creates a lot of space vertically. He's had some issues with drops this season. It's kind of a chicken or the egg thing. Russell Wilson hasn't been the best with catchable target rate, but no doubt Sutton's drops on that he should have had. He's probably their most reliable wide receiver, but not been wide receiver one level that you'd hoped. And the Broncos also another injury. Tim Patrick suffered a serious ACL injury before the season started. I think Tim Patrick started his career with the Ravens, if I'm mistaken.
Yes.
On the practice squad out there. Yep. He was going to be a huge player for them this season. One of the more underrated receivers in the NFL, in my opinion, and also probably one of the few energy players on this Broncos offense as well. I mean, he is a tenacious blocker, very physical, you know, will get at opposing players, brought an edge to this offense that they just do not have. So a very injured offensive line. Other than that, you have a bunch of honestly undrafted free agent types that are going to be playing wide receiver. Brandon Johnson caught his first touchdown pass of his career. He was fine in preseason, got hurt, came back. You have Jalen Virgil from Appalachian State, who has one big touchdown catch, more of a special teams kind of guy. And then also you have Kendall Hinton, who was the quarterback for the Broncos in that COVID game. If you guys recall, all the Broncos quarterbacks were out because of COVID protocol, and they put the wide receiver at quarterback in Kendall Hinton. They also do have a fifth round rookie gadget kind of player in Montrell Washington, but he's been disappointing so far this season. Again, fifth round pick, but they drafted him to be a special teams guy, a punt returner, and his decision making, his ball security, and the punt game has been poor.
You may complain about the injuries in terms of the Denver wide receivers, but in the desert that is the wide receiver room of the Baltimore Ravens, that really sounds like the biggest oasis I've ever heard of in terms of the set of quality receivers that is there in Denver, whether injured or not. So yeah. I know it hasn't been exactly what you wanted this year. Move on to the running back. Talk through us the position, the players there.
To start the season, the Broncos had Javonta Williams, the Broncos had Melvin Gordon, the Broncos had Mike Boone. All of those guys are now out and injured or released. Melvin Gordon fumbled the ball, I believe it was 5 times this season, and it got to the point where enough is enough, so he's out. Javonta Williams has been a major loss for this team. Honestly, you've heard me talk about it already, the two high safety shells in the league right now that are taking root. The Broncos need to figure out how to dictate teams into more cover one and cover three looks. And without Javonta Williams, that's been exceedingly hard. So he got injured in the Raiders game. Godspeed. They need him next year. He tore, I think, his ACL and his LCL. So hopefully he'll be back next year. There wasn't as significant of a type of tear. So there's some hope there, but we'll see. And also the Broncos traded for Chase Edmonds from the Dolphins. He was more of a cap throw in to work that Bradley Chubb trade in, but he played 10 snaps and then injured his ankle and has been out for the season, or probably out for the season. He might come back to close the season. So now this running back room is essentially a bunch of guys that they signed off different teams' practice squads. It's Latavius Murray, who I believe Raven, you know him. Yeah. Yeah. His running style is very similar to a rugby scrum, is kind of how I view it, where it's just like, I'm a giant guy and I'm going to push the pile forward. He did have an explosive run last week, which was the Broncos' best run of the season. But he's been their best running back since Javonta Williams got hurt. I guess other than the Mike Boone game against the Jets, he was pretty good there. They also have another practice squad running back they brought in Marlon Mack, who has been not very good for them either, but an outside zone kind of guy. So this running back room, I mean, it's crazy what it looked like to start the season to where it is at now.
Obviously not what you want there. And, you know, I think the Ravens have done a good job of picking up the guys off another team's practice squad that are R's or ones, you know, for rookies or first year players who don't yet have any service, and finding guys who are great schematic fits over the past few years. But all of a sudden these last 2 years, they went to these five of these, you know, aging veteran guys, including Latavius Murray. And that really has not worked out for the team. So, you know, they need to find other people. It complicates it a little bit. I don't know how much Denver uses the mesh point to run its offense, but
not that much. Okay. Not a lot right now. They're not really using Russell Wilson as a runner. Is that more of the offensive scheme? Is that more Russell Wilson not wanting to be the running quarterback? It does seem like there's, you know, the let Russ cook movement. He really wanted to be more of a Drew Brees style of quarterback, you know, shotgun drop back 60 times a game. And not really much RPO quarterback zone option looks there with the mesh point, but it definitely complicates it if you don't have the chemistry and the reps there between the quarterback and the running back.
Yeah. All right. That's great. Let's move on. The Broncos, do they ever use a fullback? Are they mostly running out 11 personnel, or they like to use 12? What do they like to use on offense?
A lot of 11 and a lot of 12. They will use a fullback sometimes. Andrew Beck's kind of more of that, where the fullback position's going for most teams, not the Ravens with your Ricard out there, but they have the H-back kind of guy in Andrew Beck. So they use him sometimes, but it's mostly an 11 and 12 personnel team. You'll see Greg Dulcich out there. They'll also use a tight end in Eric Saubert, some as well, more of that Y tight end to Greg Dulcich being more of an F and a move piece out there. But it's, I would say, certainly much more of an 11 personnel, 12 personnel team.
Okay, definitely 11 personnel. If you're not really following the Ravens right now, really takes advantage of who the Ravens are in a lot of ways. They don't have a good third cornerback. It's been one of the positions where they first of all put Kyle Hamilton out there as their slot corner, and they said, we just don't have anybody any better.
Yeah.
And that worked very well. Okay, and then he got hurt, and we don't know if he'll be back this week. Probably not, would be my guess. And they just have not had the success finding that third cornerback otherwise. Brandon Stevens is last week very ineffective, but anyway, we'll keep going. Defensive scheme. Let's roll it over here. The first question I always like to ask is what sort of scheme are they committed to on obvious passing downs? Because that's really the biggest thing in the NFL, obviously, in terms of leverage. What are they? Do they like to be a dime team? Are they a committed nickel team because of personnel? What do they do?
It's changed so much due to injuries and the trade of Bradley Chubb that really changed so much of what they can do run fit wise up front. To start the season, they were very much a penny front team coming from the Rams and Raheem Morris out there. Five guys on the line of scrimmage and just one linebacker.
Yeah. Sir. Okay. So it's a nickel with one inside linebacker, right?
Yep. Exactly.
That's penny front. That term, by the way, the Ravens play it a fair amount, or they used to. They haven't really played it this year. But the point I wanted to make is that I've always been upset by the term penny. There, they should just call it jumbo nickel because it's really getting an extra defensive lineman in exchange for an inside linebacker. And as soon as you start throwing off the coinage, you screw the whole system up. It doesn't mean anything anymore. But I had heard the team penny, but there is not a set name for that across all NFL teams. That the Bears call it that. And the Ravens have called it that in the past as well. They may still call it that, but if you look at Madden, it's called the 3-3-5 nickel, I believe. Mm-hmm. If you look at other things, you just call different things. But anyway, enough of that. Please talk a little bit more about what they would do on obvious passing downs then, in terms of the other teams putting out 11 personnel on a passing down. What are they looking to do?
The penny front still, with three interior defensive linemen, the two edge rushers, that all of which are kind of hybrid edges, where they are pass rushers for sure, but they like to drop the edges in space a lot and use simulated pressures from there, and man coverage, a lot of cover one from a pre-snap two safety shell look. And the reason they can do that is because Patrick Surtain, they can just leave him on an island a lot. Now, granted, last weeks have not been as good. I don't know if some of the Broncos stinkage has started to infect him as well out there, but before these last 2 weeks, he had been incredible out there, and they would essentially play a cover one with much more focus shifted to the other side of the field opposite of Patrick Surtain. Like I said, a lot of simulated pressures up there. The edge rushers are equally good in dropping, or they are coming forward. We talked about it already with Nick Benito. He's kind of a hybrid off-ball slash edge rusher, so he can drop into space effectively. Baron Browning is extremely effective in that regard. You'll see him carry running backs vertically up the field. I think a couple weeks ago, a team tried to run a wheel route, and from the edge spot, he carried that running back 20 yards down the field along the sideline from that edge alignment. So he can do that quite well also. And they do a lot of twists and stunts up front when they get in those third and long situations. The issue recently has been the Broncos have been struggling on first and second down to stop the run, where they can get in those third and long situations, and they're not as exotic with their pressure packages when it's third and three, third and two.
All right. Very good on that. Let's go in terms of how they run their pass rush scheme-wise. Do they rely on deception? They rely a lot on a four- or five-man rush that they show directly to the offense. What are they doing?
it's a lot of simulated pressures. You'll see the, like we talked about, you'll see the, you'll even see the defensive lineman drop back into a hook zone some from time to time out there. Like somebody like a Draymond Jones will drop back into space with sending both edge rushers, or both edge rushers will flare out, and you'll have two mug linebackers coming up the A gap. So they do a lot of, I believe they're the highest rate of simulated pressure of any team in the NFL so far this season under Isiah Evero. So they can be quite exotic there. Again, they don't unveil that as much if it's not a third and advantageous situation for the Broncos defense. But they do like to scheme up the blitz a good bit. The defensive line specifically has fallen off a tad with the Bradley Chubb trade. They don't really have anybody. Bradley Chubb has been awesome for the Dolphins, and he never got enough credit for his run defense. They put a lot on him in terms of the overall discipline and responsibilities of the run defense. They haven't had anybody close to him up front, which has made it harder for them to be, you know, the twist and stunt games, and also the getting to third and long. But it's mostly on third down been a cover one team, with one of the safeties dropping down into, or one of the safeties, you know, handling a running back or a tight end, another safety deep, and then everything rotating away from Patrick Surtain.
How about off-ball blitzes? Do you see something coming from the slot safety inside linebacker?
So they, another injury. The Broncos had one of the best blitzing slots in football this season in Kawan Williams. He'd probably been their most underrated player coming from the 49ers this last year. And he, talking about the additions, that's another one I forgot. He's been incredible there. In the way the league is going right now, you're seeing teams kind of get away from the Julian Edelman, Wes Welker types at the slot. And they're the much more bigger bodies, you know, the Drake Londons of the world, Cooper Kupps. These guys are massive and they can block. So what does that mean? You need your slot, your nickel corner to be a dog. He needs to be physical in the run game to handle the quick passes and the run game. Kwan Williams was doing that at an awesome level. He's been injured. He's going to be out in this game, might be out for the season. So the Broncos have had lost a lot of athleticism, tenacity, and run game discipline going from Kawan Williams to Isang Bassey, who is another undrafted free agent that's playing out there right now. Yeah, he can make plays on the ball. He's a pretty instinctual player, but if you run like shallow crossers against him, he just can't keep up. He just does not have the athleticism to do that. And he's not super physical coming downhill. There's not much twitch to his game. So that's been a big issue for the Broncos as well. Cornerback wise, another injury loss for the year. Ronald Darby tore his ACL week 5. He's, I think, was their fifth highest paid player on the roster. So he's been out. We talked about Damari Mathis already. He's been really solid out there, honestly, to the point where the Broncos might move on from Darby to save the, I think, $12 million and allocate that more to the offensive side of the ball, which needs it. But they missed Darby, and the safeties this season have been a little bit disappointing. Unfortunately, we know Justin Simmons is one of the best safeties in football, but he's been dinged up this season. He had a knee injury. He missed, I think, 6 weeks with that. Now he's dealing with a hip injury that's really bothering him, but he's playing through it. And it's impacted his ability in the run game, specifically coming downhill and closing. He's been, the Broncos defense has been very leaky in the run game. And that's a lot due to the safety play.
Okay. I was going to ask you about how do they use Simmons, but it sounds like he's more of a traditional strong safety, rarely used in a too high shell.
The Broncos do a lot of, they've been mostly a cover one, cover three, or cover six team this season, but they really like to show pre-snap two high safety shells and then rotate one after the snap. Now, because it is the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, it could be completely different what they do game plan wise. I mean, the Broncos, when they went up against the Titans 3 weeks ago, they played a lot of 5-3 front to slow down Derrick Henry. I think they held Derrick Henry to like 40 yards on 20 carries. Still lost because the offense is that bad. But they might do something completely different than what they've done this season because Lamar Jackson is such a unicorn at that position. But the safeties, essentially, they want two safeties that are pretty similar, homogenous, that can do a lot of different things, whether that be split field, free safety, or coming down and being more of a rover role from that deeper alignment.
Okay, outstanding. Take us through the defensive line, player by player, to tell us who they have. And in particular, really interested in those interior defensive line matchups versus the Ravens offensive line.
DJ Jones, the Broncos paid him big money to come over from San Francisco this last year, and he has been awesome. He has been a really good player. I think he missed one game so far this season, but he's been probably their best addition so far this year. The Broncos were really poor against the run last season, and DJ Jones has changed that a lot. He's a super physical player and gets a lot of displacement at the point of attack in the run game, whether it be the A gap or the B gap. He's not the lengthiest player. You know, he's not out there looking like Jordan Davis or, you know, the kind of Mr. Incredible arms, but he's super stout and very physical at the point of attack, and he can create space for other defensive linemen or linebackers at the point of attack. So he's been awesome. The Broncos also really love Draymond Jones, a third round draft pick out of the 2019 draft, 85 overall, I believe, coming out of Ohio State. He's going to be one of those people this offseason where you're going to see the contract and you're like, Draymond Jones got how much money? He's been awesome. I think he has 5.5 sacks so far this season, and that's in spite of the Broncos never playing with a lead, hardly ever. You know, they've not really had many advantageous pin your ears back pass rush situations, but he's been awesome. I've been really excited to see him in this defensive front as well. The Broncos, Ejiro Evero does an awesome job of isolating a pass rusher in a one-on-one situation, which is what you want. I mean, we kind of have seen it a bit with coming from the Rams with Aaron Donald. They've been using Draymond Jones in that Aaron Donald mold where they're going to try to do what they can to isolate him in a one-on-one because he is extremely disruptive. I think he was top 10 in the NFL last season in pressures from the interior defensive line. He's been, obviously, interior defensive linemen don't get the situations or the stats like an edge rusher does, but one of the better pass rushing interior defensive linemen in the NFL. They will play nose. I'm guessing you'll see it more often against the Ravens in Mike Purcell. He's fine. He's an energy player for this team. He's the one who yelled at Russell Wilson on the sideline in the last game. He's a kind of an, you know, an at war zero kind of player, just an average nose tackle. And you also will see Deshaun Williams rotated in there as the 4-eye or 5 technique opposite there.
Do they have any nose tackle that is likely to be just way too big and too tough? Is that Jones perhaps for Linderbaum?
I think you'll see Jones somewhat there, but I'm guessing you're going to see the Broncos use more big personnel, which would be Mike Purcell. He's more of their true classic nose guard type that they'll use in certain situations, where Jones will probably be flanked out more to the 4-eye spot.
Okay. All right. Very good. Take us through the linebackers.
Linebackers, I am very much a, and Ravens fans might hate to hear this, but I am very much a anti-linebacker truther. I think you want to have good ones there, but I don't believe in investing big money at the linebacker spot, personally, especially in today's NFL. And the Broncos have not done that, and they've continually put out top 5, top 10 defenses. So they invest heavily in the defensive line and the cornerback spot, and it's worked out pretty well for them over the last few seasons. So the Broncos have former fourth-round pick from my alma mater, one of my favorite players. Actually, I know some of his family, Josie Jewell out of the University of Iowa, one of the big-time tacklers, not a great athlete, but he's never in the wrong position, ever. He's just super instinctual, a little bit smaller. I have more issues with his size than I do his athleticism, but he is always in the right spot. If you isolate him in space versus a, you know, Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel, yeah, like he's going to have some issues out wide, but he's a very good player. And then the other linebacker, they had a really interesting young athletic player named Jonas Griffith that came from Indiana State, but he's out for the season as well with an injury. So they've been playing Alex Singleton there, who was a special teams dynamo and a really high tackle volume player for the Eagles. He provides a lot of energy. He's a little bit more reckless than Josie Jewell. You'll catch him out of position sometimes. A lot of times if there is an issue with the linebacker core in terms of discipline, it's coming from Alex Singleton. But they're overall a very solid unit and probably one of the units that's outperforming, considering the Broncos are not paying that much resource-wise for the position.
And those guys, are they platoon players at all? And this is, I don't know if you've got an extra 5 minutes for us, Nick,
yeah,
but I'd really love to talk about this because I'm a big platoon at linebacker, and you solve a lot of problems. Trying to find three down unicorns is very expensive in terms of draft capital.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously the Ravens tried to do that with Patrick Queen, but if you look at the inside linebacker pricing in terms of draft capital, it's off the charts. Now, you know, the guys who are getting taken early, like the two Devins, White and Bush, and how they're not really coming to the end of their first contracts. White's, I think, already been re-signed, but they're not, you know, they're not universally thought to be all that great is the other problem. But if you have, if you decide to go with platoon players, gives you the option to get your inside linebackers off the field. You put the green dot at safety, and that gives you, and so you might not have thought you'd be talking with a guy who'd be positive on linebacker platooning, but I'm very positive on it. The Ravens are very successful when they did it. I think you can pay one inside linebacker. I don't see how you can pay two in today's NFL.
Yeah, I think that you pay them cheap. You limit what their influence is, and you have your sideline. Like, people are like, oh, we need a sideline to sideline linebacker. No, I need my linebacker to make the tackles, not be leaky in the box, mm-hmm. play the hook zone, make the tackles that come in their area. And my sideline to sideline is going to come from my edge setting defenders that are going to do a great job of not letting those running backs get out wide, or my safeties and cornerbacks who need to be good tacklers. If you're asking your linebackers to play sideline to sideline or play in space against wide receivers, you're already cooked. There's only Luke Kuechly's like the only guy that's been able to do it consistently over the last decade. Those guys just don't exist. And you talk about linebackers drafted in the first round. I don't think there's been a position that has busted as hard as a first round pick as the linebacker spot over the last decade. I mean, you mentioned some of them, but we can even go further down the line. I mean, Isaiah Simmons, mm-hmm. Zaven Collins. I mean, there's the only one that I can think of that has hit recently is Micah Parsons. And the reason Micah Parsons hit is not because of his off-ball linebacker ability. It's the pass rush.
Yeah.
So linebackers are valuable, but not in terms of a first round investment. And I think the reason that is because it's not a physical tools position as much as it is a instincts and processing position, which is so much harder to evaluate. It's another reason that, you know, you see a lot of the best linebackers in the NFL are day two picks. A lot of the best safeties in the NFL are day two picks. You don't have to use a first round pick to identify that guy.
Yeah, it's the guys who play faster than their 40 time, as I always say it, are the guys who are really special. Nick, really appreciate having you on for this topic alone. I mean, just getting into these side conversations, I love, but I'll tell you what, you're answering the most important question for a general manager, which is, where do I not spend? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you listen to the voices on Twitter, everybody wants to spend at every position, and they particularly want to spend 3/4 of your total cap space on wide receiver. If you're the Ravens fan, that's all we hear. You know, we've already got the quarterback. Okay, now get him the weapons he needs. I don't care what the cost. Put it on the credit card. You hear all these terms used because people don't really understand the cap. People are not season ticket holders is one of my beefs. Is that if you're a season ticket holder, you don't want to play the cap roller coaster. The way the Rams played it, and they won a Super Bowl, and now they're terrible, and they're going to be terrible for a while. You know, that's not the game I want played with my season tickets. I want you to field a good team, damn it, and do it year after year. And you know, you get to a certain exhaustion level covering a bad team that I'm sure you've felt some of year.
You mean tell me about 6 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's difficult to you know, stay with it with the same kind of effort level sometimes when the team is down. Last year, very difficult year for Ravens analysts, but I appreciate you taking a little bit of extra time with us, Nick. But that's a great point you're making. So take us through the secondary now. You mentioned Patrick Surtain. Start with him.
I mean, he's phenomenal. I think the main thing and my biggest issue with him coming out of the draft, I really wanted a quarterback in that 2021 draft. I wanted Justin Fields, full disclosure. But Patrick mm-hmm. Surtain has been incredible. I think the area where teams are starting to try to take advantage of him is longer developing routes with pure speed. He is sometimes not keeping up with guys. Now, he's a glider. He's always smooth. He's got incredible, incredible technique for a 22-year-old player, probably thanks to his dad being mm-hmm. a longtime NFL cornerback as well. But those long-time routes, whether they be long crossers or sluggos or anything like that, if you have some speed, they can get away from him. He's a 4.4 guy, not a 4.2 guy. So that's something that you've seen from him as well, especially if the Broncos are not being as aggressive with their coverage up front. He's got flawless press technique, but off coverage sometimes he doesn't have the burst that you see from the guys who are better than him in the NFL in that regard. So he but still probably one of the top three cornerbacks in football right now, even though he's on a little bit of a downer right now. Sang Bassey has been mostly playing the slot. The Broncos brought him up off the practice squad, but he's a borderline rosterable kind of guy. If you can attack him, whether it be the run or the pass, you do it. Number 34, he's a weakness out there. Damari Mathis has been very good. He's again, doesn't always trust his technique. He can be a little bit grabby. He's prone to some mistakes out there, but he's always in position. He just needs to learn to trust his technique. I think it's going to come with him. I think the Broncos are going to be able to go young and cheap at the cornerback spot next season to create some cap space to further allocate money into the offensive side of the ball to hopefully salvage something with Russell Wilson at quarterback. The safety position, Justin Simmons been playing hurt this year. He's not been playing at an all-pro level, but he's been having some issues with tackling, specifically coming downhill, not as aggressive, not as good at breaking down. If you get past him, sometimes I think he's going to be a little bit flat-footed coming down and playing that D gap. And Kareem Jackson is the other starting safety. He's certainly lost a step. He was a former first round pick out of Alabama to the Houston Texans, played cornerback for a number of years, really a physical player. Like if Lamar Jackson leaves the ball floating at all, Kareem Jackson will take out whatever player is there. He will murder, you know, a crosser if it's a bad throw. So you want to watch out for him, but he's lost two steps, which is unfortunate because he's definitely a tone setter for the defense. I think that if the Broncos didn't end up losing Caden Stearns, another player who got hurt, a fifth round draft pick out of Texas, he was playing a really good football, and then he had a hip injury and is out probably for the year as well. If he hadn't gotten hurt, you probably would have seen Kareem Jackson been replaced by now, given his level of play. But Broncos aren't there because of the injuries.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Just a terrific rundown on the personnel here. Anything specific that you think the Broncos will do differently to defend Jackson, Andrews, the Ravens' run game? Particularly, one thing we've seen is a kind of a dichotomy between teams who will blitz Jackson, particularly sending the spy quickly as soon as there's any hint of the pocket being broken is the big thing we've seen recently with some of these athletic inside linebackers. It could be that this would be a job for Simmons in this game,
yeah,
that he'd be a guy they'd send. You see any differences in terms of how Denver plays football to try and contain Jackson?
I think they will blitz, but I don't think it's going to be a send a guy late. I don't think they have the athleticism to close space at the second level of the defense to get that done in that sense. It can't be kind of a QB spy, and then once he breaks contain, chase him down. I think that's a waste of a player because you don't have somebody who can pursue with that kind of speed, unfortunately. So it's probably going to be more of a lot of five-man pass rushes with single gaps out there and having to run through those gaps while still being disciplined in your lane. You cannot get blown up there. I'm guessing it's going to be more of a lot of onus on the defensive line to get it done and allocating resources more so to the box with playing more cover three, cover one on the back end. Because right now, I mean, DeSean Jackson's probably the best receiver out there. I think you probably trust whatever cornerback you have to slow that down. And then Ricard as well. I mean, this Ravens team doesn't have a lot of answers right now in the pass game. So I think it's going to be more of those run blitzes, not so much the QB spy and then hunt him after he breaks contain.
All right. Very good. Any one player, we don't really do score predictions here, but any one player maybe on each side of the ball you think matches up well against the Ravens?
One player who matches up well against the Ravens. I think DJ Jones is going to have a big game. Ravens have somewhat struggled in the interior defensive line. I love Linderbaum in the run game, but some of the issues there, I think DJ Jones and Draymond Jones both are going to have big games. Those interior guys are big. On the offensive side of the ball, oh man, it's so hard on the offense. I think that the big one is going to have to be if either KJ Hamler or Jerry Jeudy do play this week, it'll probably have to be them. They're going to have to figure out how to get the pass game going and get some explosives there. If the Ravens try to go man coverage, it'll be Jerry Jeudy or it's the KJ Hamler big bomb over the top because he's got crazy speed when he's out there. I'm not sure if that hamstring injury will limit his ability to get vertical in this game, but when he's out there, he's probably one of the top 15 fastest players at receiver in the NFL.
Probably a very good bet, either one of those. Zay Jones just had the game of his life in this last week for the Jaguars, so definitely a possibility that some wide receiver emerges, unfortunately. Absolutely fantastic stuff, Nick. This is one of the best rundowns we've gotten this year in terms of players. We have very knowledgeable technical guys on, but you're right there at the top of this list. Really appreciate you coming on. Tell folks again one more time where they can find your work.
Yeah, guys, you can find me on Twitter at Nick Kendall, MHH. That's KEND ELL. I work for Mile High Huddle over an affiliate of Sports Illustrated. Been there for 7 years now. As soon as the Broncos won the Super Bowl and went on this horrible tear, that's when I joined. So I haven't covered a good team yet, but one day, maybe. You can also find me. I do an unbelievable amount of live streams and podcasts covering the Broncos. I'm live on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning, and Tuesday, Wednesday evening over on Mile High Huddle. I also cover the Atlanta Falcons with a friend of mine, Scott Kennedy, used to work at NFL Network for a number of years. And we do those on Mondays and Wednesday mornings as well. And also writing at Mile High Huddle as well, covering the Broncos with a very draft-centric focus.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up with a DM on Twitter. Also asking folks, find that one guy who's over 60 years old or maybe over 55, doesn't really know how to use podcasts. Show them how to go to filmstudybaltimore.com, play the podcast directly off the website. Want to get some word of mouth out there. Those people are very hard to reach, by the way. Often don't have Twitter accounts. Please help them out. your dad, your granddad, maybe in some cases, to help find this this podcast. Nick, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Hopefully you have a good game, and for the love of God, no more injuries.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.